Welcome to the Trino Community Broadcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trino Community Broadcast. My name, as always, is Cole Bowden. I'm a developer advocate at Starburst, working with the Trino community. And joining me, as always, again, is Manfred Moser. Manfred, how are you doing today?
Oh, good, good. You know, I'm driving one-handed because I got a bit hurt mountain biking, but everything is rocking along. Lots going on, and we have lots to talk about today about that. It's cool.
You got hurt mountain biking, Manfred?
Yeah, for those of you that don't know, I'm a bit of a off-road rider. And yeah, let's just say a wall ride was a bit high and the landing was a bit harder.
It happens sometimes. Comes with the sport, right? That's kind of the expectation. I always remember it's Travis Pastrana was his name.
Yeah.
Who did that along with some other sports and claims to have broken like every bone in his body other than a couple inner ear ones. So
yeah, I'm nowhere near there and I don't aim to get there ever.
Yeah, it sounds unpleasant. In any case, today we have a bit of a more laid-back episode of the Trino Community Broadcast. There's no guests today. We're just going to catch up with what's been going on in the Trino community and talk about a few of the projects involved in Trino, where Manfred and I are going to run through the history of them. I'll kind of be interviewing Manfred as our maintainer and hands-on guy for everything about what's been going on, what the history is, and why we use these tools in conjunction with Trino. But before we do that, Manfred, we have to talk about what's been going on in Trino in the last couple weeks.
Yeah, there's been a lot.
We're waiting for Manfred to share his screen because it has disappeared on our screen.
Yeah, you can put the banner in the meantime on.
Oh, yeah, of course. I can do that. There we go.
Yeah, so we got three releases out, but like it's actually only two. So we got Trino 455 out. 456 kind of got out, but it like messed up. So we literally like a couple of minutes later ended up cutting 457. So we got those two releases, and we're getting closer with 458 as well. There's a lot of things already sort of like in flight for that. It's going to be a big release for a lot of users because it's going to contain some breaking changes, but not breaking in a bad way. So we'll tell you more about all that later.
Do you want to zoom in real quick while I run through 455 and 457?
Yeah, how do I do that?
It's Command Plus on a Mac.
How about this?
There you go. That'll do. There's many different ways to do this. You can like click in the top right corner too and just click the plus button.
Yeah, I'm on the Windows machine at the moment.
So. In any case, so in 455, we added query starting time and query statistics in all event listeners, including that new Kafka event listener. So if you want to know exactly when a query started, you can do that. This will help you understand perhaps the distribution of your load over the course of a day. If you're trying to understand how you're utilizing Trino, get some more telemetry data and metrics. We also allow configuring endpoints for the native Azure file system. So
yeah, both of those have actually like important side effects. So the Kafka event listener is finally documented. I ended up putting that together. People were surprised that it exists. So we did sneak it out in a couple of releases ago, and without docs, no one knew about it. So now there's docs. There was also discussion in some people about a PostgreSQL event listener. So if anyone is interested in other event listeners, we have the HTTP event listener, the OpenLineage one, and the MySQL one. Obviously, the MySQL one is kind of like just sending the data to a database, and you can do that for any database. So a PostgreSQL one would literally be a copy of the MySQL one with a bit of SQL adjusted. So if anyone is interested in that and working on that or wants to work on that, that's totally something we'd be interested in having as well. It might be worth thinking about a similar approach to what we do with all the connectors that are JDBC based, where we have like a base JDBC connector. Well, it could be a base JDBC event listener. So,
okay. And then the Azure file system?
Yeah, the Azure file system. That was a little funny thing that we found. So Azure has a hard-coded URL for all their objects, like for all their storage. But for GovCloud and certain other things, there's a different one. So in order to make it possible to talk to those file systems in your Iceberg, Delta Lake, Hudio, or Hive connectors, we need to extend the native file system to allow configuration of this endpoint. And that was kind of the last change that got in for the native file system that made it really rock solid. And supports all the use cases we are aware of now. So that's also what we're going to talk about later. We're going to make this the default soon, this native new file system. So very cool.
Yeah, we've been working on the native file systems. It's Dane has been leading a lot of that work, if I recall, just to reduce dependencies, simplify things, and speed things up in Trino. When your file system management is built in as opposed to some weird old library, it tends to go a little better, and it's easier to make improvements that relate to the Trino engine when it's in Trino as well. So that work is a pretty big deal, and once it's the default, it will be pretty exciting. 456, as Manfred said, does not really exist. It has joined Trino version 404 in the land of releases you do not want to use because they are not real.
Well, I mean, it was kind of a little bit different. 404 we skipped on purpose.
Yeah, 404 was for the joke, but it's effectively the same thing. It's a release that's not a release. So not a lot to talk about there other than sometimes things go wrong, you know? That's just life.
Yeah, fair enough.
So 457. Involve performance improvements for queries with joins when fault-tolerant execution is enabled. So with spilling the disk, joins can get a little messy. It's going to make that a little better. Improve performance for LZ4, Snappy, and Z-standard compression and decompression. So that's used in a lot of different places. You can configure your compression format somewhere. So if you've configured to any of those, I forget exactly what that property is.
We'll actually like talk about both the joins, the LZ4, and then the concurrent write stuff in more detail later.
Yeah, okay. We've also published a JDBC driver jar without bundled third-party dependencies. So if you want one of those.
Yeah, that's very useful because so the JDBC driver that we've shipped so far is a big file. It's one file. It has anything it needs in it, which is super useful if you want to just drop it into your Java application that's already like built by someone else and you want to put one file into a directory like extended libraries or whatever, then that works very nicely because everything is needed in there. But if you're writing your own application, then you might want to take advantage of a smaller jar and only use like Apache Maven or so for your transitive dependencies and pull those separate dependencies in without having them duplicated and stuff like that. And the separate jar now enables that. So it's very nice for people that write Java applications who want to then ship our JDBC driver with it, which as you know, right? Like more and more people write data applications with some sort of uses that talk to Trino and then that makes that better for them. So that's cool.
And then our final note that we're highlighting is that's a bit of a beefy one, Manfred, where we're improving performance for concurrent write operations on S3 by using lockless Delta Lake write reconciliation, which was made possible with the release of S3 conditional write support. So
this has more actually
impact than you'd expect, though it is very specific sounding.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because like we beat everyone to implementing that. So Marius and the team, Mateusz, implemented all this. The AWS SD3 SDK made this conditional write feature just recently available. And even like Delta Lake itself within the Spark runtime or so doesn't support using that yet. But Trino already supports it. And it's a considerable performance improvements because, well, it doesn't need to write anything if it's already there, right? So,
yeah, concurrent writes are very tricky in a database environment. There's many different ways for things to go wrong. And doing it conditionally is pretty powerful because if something goes wrong, you're not like resetting or rolling back or anything like that. You can just keep chugging along. So it makes that operation a lot more efficient, which is why it's a big deal. So
yeah, it's also interesting that like one thing that I learned out of that is we were very early, but the other side is that the S3 SDK was very late. Like the other clouds already had that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, this is a thing that you would want in your data lake house. So it's good that it's here now.
Yeah.
So in any case, Manfred, that's it for releases. Of course, there's more going on in each of 455 and 457. So check out those specific release notes if you want. There's not more going on in 456. You can skip right over that one. which is like the first time ever we've fully covered a release in a Trino Community Broadcast. But the rest of this episode, we're going to be talking about some of the stuff that has had an impact on Trino and made it a little better. So
yeah, it's actually related to things that shipped in these releases. I think the first one that we want to just quickly touch on, I'm going to just jump to the release notes for 457 because you'll be best seeing that there. You see there is this improved performance of queries involving fault tolerant joints when fault tolerant solutions. And this is actually the first one we have adaptive plan optimization. So this is a little bit documented now. It's only available in fault tolerant execution, but it's a first arrival of this, what's called adaptive plan optimization. So imagine how this works. So far, when you send a query to Trino, it goes, looks at the query and goes, okay, this is sort of the plan. And then it executes the plan based on whatever it has at the start, right? Like it looks at the stats, if they're available, and then it does cost-based optimization, that kind of stuff. But it basically runs. So it once it started and decided what to do, it's going. Consider like, you know, like you start running and then you're like, if it encounters on the way that actually there would be a better way, it's too late. Like Trino just runs with the query plan that was decided at the start. Now, in some situations, when a query is running, it could encounter things about the details of the data from additional stats and so on in the files that it reads that a different plan, like join reordering or so, might be better. So far, we didn't have any mechanism to do that. Fault tolerant execution, however, with the exchange and so on, can sort of like save statuses within the query execution. And then it can now, with this new property, reorder the joins on the fly. So it can go, oops, this would be faster if I ran the query the other, like if I processed that join the other way, and it can switch gears and do that. And that's the first one. I'm hoping we'll get more of these adaptive plan optimizations in place because they're potentially very powerful because they can adjust to the actual data of your query, which obviously changes all the time. So it can like really be quite optimal. This is the first one and it's very exciting to have that.
Yeah, and maybe we can get into it even a little more detail for those who don't know about why join ordering matters. Is Trino for a lot of joins uses what's called a broadcast join, where you load one table into memory and then stream through the other table by reading it. And generally, you want your larger table to be in memory. If I don't have that backwards, as that means that streaming through the other table takes less time. So if you have a very small table in memory and a very large table you're streaming through, it's going to take a lot of time to stream through that table. Whereas if you do it the other way around, it's going to be much quicker, which makes it kind of important to have joins ordered the correct way. As if you're doing a bunch of joins in a backwards format, then you're just going to waste a ton of time and your query is going to be really slow. So being able to realize this on the fly is a pretty big deal, especially if you have like selective joins. The effective size of the table that you're trying to join with can vary wildly. You know, if you do a where clause on a million row table that filters it down to 25 rows, that can be important to use as the stream side rather than the in-memory side. It's actually called build and probe as well. If you want to look up broadcast joins, you can learn more about this. But
yeah, there's a bunch of that sort of stuff also in the documentation and then more also in the Trino book, which you obviously can get for free from the Starburst website still. So take advantage of that and learn more about that. But it's very exciting to have this starting to come to fruition.
Yeah. Do we want to move on to talking about the next project in our show notes?
Yeah. So this is literally related to this property, like this LZ4 Snappy and compression.
Yeah. So, we're talking about air compressor, Manfred.
Air compressor, right?
It kind of does what it says on the tin, right? This is a library that has been made and maintained mostly by the Trino maintainers with a little bit of outside help. There's a couple people there who don't work on Trino. But functionally, what it does is handles compression for Java. And Trino uses it pretty heavily. But it's been around for a while, and there's an interesting story to it. So, Manfred?
Yeah, it's interesting because When you look at Trino, the code base, you're like, oh, it's just Trino. That's a big project. But actually, it's quite a lot bigger, actually. Like, underneath Trino sits what's called Airlift. And Airlift is another organization on GitHub, which has another bunch of projects. The main one is Airlift itself, which basically implements or like provides a framework to have a web server with REST endpoints and logging and all that kind of stuff, which Trino sits on top of. And you'll see that, like, when you look at the properties documentation for Trino, you see that a lot of it is actually Airlift properties and things like that. The properties have like a type, so there's like a duration or data size properties. All that stuff comes out of Airlift. And then the addition, so that's already a big project underneath Trino that's kind of hidden, but like pretty much part of Trino actually as well, because it's like run by the same people. And then Air Compressor is a custom separate project again that is, as you said, Cole, for compression. The reason this was implemented is like, and you see here, this is kind of crazy, but you see here, Git ignore 13 years ago. So this library has been around for a long time, like literally from the start. When Trino was started, it needed to read these object files from like Hive, typically back then. And they use compression. And there was no good compression implementation for the Java virtual machine, like decompression and compression for these formats. You can see here it supports C standard, LZ4, Snappy, LZO, Deflate. So it was implemented in Java to be able to have it in Trino. And back then, that was totally like good and fast. And in fact, faster than the native implementations. Then Java is a great runtime. But over time, and this is where we are now, what happened is more and more GPUs came, and you know, like how it is nowadays. It is now at a level where the native libraries have gotten so much implementation help for supporting different processor architectures and stuff that they are faster. And luckily, there's two additional things that are like, I mean, you could say luckily, but it's not really lucky. Trino has also been very much on the ball for upgrading. So we are Java 22, and we are with that able to use the foreign function interface implementation. So Trino can now relatively easily use native libraries. So in this release, what happened is a new air compressor release was created by Dane and Mateusz mostly that uses these native binaries. So basically we're embedding native C library or C writ. I guess they're in C written. I don't even know, like they're native. I'm guessing they're written in C. And now when you call, and they are then embedded in Trino. So when you now use compression and decompression for these org, parquet, and other files, which is always the case, then it goes, calls through from the JVM down to the native code, which is now faster. And the implementation was relatively easy because we're on Java 22. And you don't need to do anything. That's the other good thing. Like, it just like works, basically. We're shipping it for the different processor architectures, and it automatically is included. If you really need to like disable it, you shouldn't have to do that, but it's possible. We have that in the documentation, but the disablement is documented in the docs in like and linked from it. So it's a JVM configuration property that you can pass in, but typically it should just work. And it is significantly faster, which is great because org, parquet, and other files, reading and writing happens all the time with our object storage, like Iceberg or whatever. And that helps a lot. It's very exciting. I
mean, everything is getting compressed and decompressed all of the time. So this is a high traffic code path in Trino and in your queries.
Yeah.
So when we're able to admit, you know, like, hey, this thing we've been working on, there's a better way now. Let's go make things faster. That just makes things faster across the board for most connectors, most use cases, most users. You're going to see things moving quicker, moving snappier. This probably matters more at larger scales with like compressed object storage and less for like shorter and smaller.
Yeah. Queue. So like specifically it matters for Iceberg, Delta Lake, Hoodie, and Hive connectors, nice, where we have Orca and Parquet and other files being read and written all the time. And that's why you see it in the release notes. But it also matters for the fault tolerant execution mode, because fault tolerant execution uses Orca and Parquet files as temporary storage of the status of the like what's called exchange spooling. So basically like temporary results during like query processing are sort of like stored, so you can sort of like have snapshots, and if something fails, you can go back. And that is now also using that. So you should see performance improvements for all these four connectors and for fault tolerant execution mode, which is obviously really great news. And like huge congratulations to Dane and Mateusz for getting all this out. This is pretty amazing. And the culmination of long, long efforts to move to Java 22, understand how to ship these native binaries, how to use foreign function interface properly in Java 22, and all that stuff. So,
yeah, and this is one of the benefits that Trino gets by being on Java 22 as opposed to staying in the past. Like, Java 8 is still deployed everywhere in the world on so many different
tools. Don't say that, it hurts. Cool.
And we're just like living our best lives on the newest version of Java. We're updating to Java 23 relatively soon as well, correct?
Yeah, it's crazy, but the release cycle from the Java world is very much like, you know, ticking clock, like works nicely. Every September it's time. So I think it's actually, I want to say next Friday that 23 is coming out. So a couple of releases later, we'll be switching over to Java 23 on the Trino side as well. So,
and with that, that means that users can try out Trino with Java 23. Generally, we ask that you attempt it before it becomes mandatory and run some queries and see if everything works as expected, and let us know if it doesn't work as expected. That's kind of crucial, is the Trino team cannot test nearly as much as the Trino user base can. And if you run queries with Java 23 and find any issues, you let us know. We can try and fix those. We can pause the port, or we can just go figure out why that is and go patch it.
Yeah. With Java 2023, it should be nearly no issues, because literally when we switched to 22, we also enabled the test runs with 23 already. So we've been running with 23 all our unit tests for all the releases and everything since we started to with 2022. So it's pretty solid already. I'd be very surprised if there's anything coming up. Also, we had no reports or problems with like about anything with 22.
Yeah, the porting and upgrading Java versions is usually pretty painless.
Yeah.
It seems like the Java versions tend to be relatively stable, which is kind of what you would hope for one of the most prominent programming languages in the world. But it's nice for things to just work.
And they do get better all the time. I'm not actually sure what some of the language and other improvements are in 23, but I'm thinking virtual threads and those things that we're working on for performance work are becoming more and more prevalent as well. So,
yeah, I've been reading. There was like some drama in the Java community where they like created this experimental feature relating to,
yeah, one of them is being backed out, but like,
yeah, they got rid of it.
That's fine. It just got backed out. It was never, I remember which one. I think it was string templates, if I'm not lying.
Yeah, that's correct.
And it's not like it was just they found too many issues with it and took it out. It's just gonna come later in a different version, so that's fine. It was always a, like, I think they call it experimental or incubating or something feature.
Yeah, it was with some label that said, don't bank on this existing. We're just trying it out.
Yeah, and that's what we also do on Trino. We only like adopt features that are like settled, like the native support was settled basically. So that's cool.
Do we want to go back to talking about airlift a little more? I may have jumped the gun on Java 23.
Yeah, no, I think it's all related. So Air Compressor is basically that library we have that now in place. Airlift itself is this larger library. And one of the things it enables, for example, it brings us the Jetty web server, which is like our web server internal. And that's also related to a recent upgrade on that in the release notes that you might have seen. I'm not sure if that actually is in the release notes even. No, I think we didn't even add that to the release notes. So one of the things that came in is we upgraded an Airlift version again, which brought a Jetty upgrade, which allows us now hopefully to switch to HTTP2 for the internal communication. So that's going to be another performance improvement because the Clino cluster internal communication, obviously, right, like when you have a coordinator and then you have many workers, they need to talk to each other all the time. And using HTTP2 for that would be allowing us to have long-running connections between them going. So all the like open connection, talk, close connection could be like, well, here's the connection, let's talk, sort of like to that level, which would improve performance considerably. But in the process of implementing that, Mateusz worked with the Jetty guides from WebTide, and we've been finding bugs in Jetty, and they've been fixing things, and like it's deep down technical, super interesting, but also very, very deep in the you know, HTTP protocol layer and stuff like that. But it looks like we're getting very close. So that's very exciting. And that comes out of Trino. So if you are out of Airlift, if you want to like understand a bit more what's in Airlift, when you go and look at in Trino in the documentation here, you look at properties reference, and then you look at things like, say, HTTP client or HTTP server. These properties, if you look at them in the code base, you won't find them in the Trino code base. And you're like, where is this coming from? It comes out of Airlift. So when you like developing a Trino and sometimes you are working in the code base and you can't find things, it helps if you open Airlift in the relevant version in your IDE, in a multi-workspace or separately, and look in what's there, right? So sometimes when you don't know what's going on, that's what's happening. And now, obviously, Air Compressor is another one of those libraries. There's a few more, but the big one is really Airlift. It makes a huge base. And by the way, Trino Gateway, we had a big effort going to move to the same base framework, Airlift, and we got that done. And that's very exciting. And we had that out in the last 10 release, and we're working towards 11 release with that same thing. So that's really good. And it allows us to have features like open telemetry support or open metric support relatively easily enabled in Trino Gateway, because all we have to say, activate the module from Airlift, and that's it, right? Like, so it saves a lot of effort to do that. And by the way, for people that want to write an application, you can use Airlift independently to write your own application.
Yeah, if you want a like REST service in Java, Airlift actually can power that. So you can give it a look. It has its own documentation and README, its own overview, its own getting started page. It is mostly been built by the Trino team to be used in Trino, but it is a library that can be used as a library. So
yeah,
this is kind of the modularization of that which makes Trino great. The more people use it, you know, the better it gets. That's the beauty of open source, is if you adopt it and you find bugs, then you can fix it, and that fixes it for everyone and all of the Trino users and all of your users downstream.
And obviously Airlift shares a lot of the philosophy, right? Like, we are iterating fast, going with Java 22 and things like that. So it all ties together and works very well with like modern development. So,
yep. We got a couple more things to touch on this episode, Manfred.
We talked about Air Compressor, Airlift, Java 22, 23 coming soon. I'm guessing it's going to be October by the time we ship it, but you know, that's still very soon. So it's exciting.
Yeah. So let's talk about our object file system support.
Yes. So for those of you that are not aware, we have, and like, I can go back to the documentation here. we have this segment called Object Storage.
There it is.
That talks about us having these like 40 object storage connectors, Delta Lake, Hive, Hootie, and Iceberg. Basically, they all talk to different clouds and where the files are stored, right? So typical usage is Amazon S3, but also Google Cloud Storage, Azure, and then the legacy Hadoop file system or HDFS, right? Up to now, this release, the Hadoop one was automatically set to true. And therefore, these legacy ones, like legacy S3 with all these properties that you're probably familiar with if you configured any Hive catalog, was active. But the problem with these legacy file systems and the Hadoop one is that it pulls in the Hadoop libraries, and they are old and crafty and unmaintained and full of security and performance issues that we don't want to deal with. And the Hadoop ecosystem is like very slow about dealing with them either. So we had a long effort going to basically re-implement and modernize support for these file systems. David, as the file system lead, has gotten that to a level where we're pretty much like finished now. I think it's like very solid and it's running in production in Starburst Galaxy and things like that. So it's definitely proven to be much better in terms of performance and critical for things like dynamic catalog reloading, because there's no memory leaks from the Hadoop libraries and stuff of that happening. So the next step in one of the next releases, probably even the next one, is that this setting is going to be false, which means no file system support in any of these catalogs is automatically loaded, which means in each catalog, you will need to decide what you're using and enable the right one. So if you're on S3, you enable that one. If you're on Google Cloud Storage, you enable that one. And then depending on what you enable, you want to configure it using those new properties. So the S3 properties, the Google Cloud Storage or the Azure ones, not the old legacy ones. If you're really in a bind, you can just enable this one again to true like it is now, and then use the old legacy properties, but only do that temporarily and keeping in mind that we will get rid of this. Because of the various limitations, we will remove all these legacy ones over time, because the SDKs from those cloud storage providers are actually going to be deprecated. And then obviously we can't support something that the cloud providers don't even support. So in the near future, I guess later this year or early next year, these will all be removed and you'll be just using the proper ones. So might as well switch now when you're switching, and we'll have documentation. We have documentation in each one of them migrating. Like if you go here, we have the migration to the new one in each one of them. So if you are currently on like the legacy S3, you have this migration to the S3 file system, the new one, and it tells you on per property what to do and stuff like that. So it should be pretty easy to upgrade and there should be no issues. And we do want to hear from you if you run into any problems, right? Like,
yeah. And it should be made clear. It's these tables show you, you know, if you've configured your legacy file storage, all of these configuration properties are going to be new. You're going to need to change how everything is configured. But this table shows you your old property, the new property that replaces it. And a lot of times it just maps one to one. You don't even need to change what the value is. You can just change the name of the property and it'll work as normal. And we've got this notes column for situations where you may need to pay a little more attention or there's a little more nuance.
Yeah, and you can even do things like leaving the old catalog, switching the legacy on again, and creating a new catalog with the new configuration and then compare how they work or whatever. Like, there's lots of ways to like upgrade to it. It should be no problem to figure it out.
Basically. And, you know, maybe it's a good opportunity to revisit how you've configured your file system setup, and maybe you can make some changes or improvements. So you've had some pain points, and while you're going in and fiddling around with things, you can fix that. So
yeah, you're definitely going to see some performance improvements from like just upgrading to the native one. Everyone that's done that in the past so far that we talked to has gotten improvements from it. So I don't see why you shouldn't see those performance improvements either.
Yeah, and we're excited to kill the old stinky flawed file system, legacy file system support. Yeah. Deleting code and deleting old code that's bad is one of the best parts of being an engineer, as it means everything just gets to be better and cleaner from now on. So we're looking forward to that happening in a few months.
Yeah. One thing that's to keep in mind is obviously we're not deleting the Hadoop support completely because there's still people that use HDFS itself. That will be continuously available. But what we are removing is
Legacy objects.
S3 support via the Hadoop libraries, kind of like indirect redirection. So keep that in mind. So don't worry, nobody will be stranded. That's exciting. We're working on that now, getting through the making the docs very user-friendly, hopefully, so that everyone can tell what's happening and figuring it out in the code.
Yeah. So we've got one more thing on the agenda, Manfred. I'm actually not even sure what you're hinting at with this. Is a quick glance at client protocol improvements.
What we've talked about so far was all this stuff about what's called Project Hummingbird. This is like an umbrella project that sort of encapsulates all the performance work we're doing. It's interesting to read, and you see these are the tasks, but we're constantly adding more tasks, right? Like, it's not like we already know what we're going to do. Like this, we're just adding more things. And like the compression, for example, came under that umbrella, right? And there's much more ideas and things we're looking at. And the other umbrella project that we have in this realm is Project Swift. And Project Swift had some, in the recent releases, there were some changes came that didn't show up in the release notes because it's like under the hood plumbing changes, but they landed and it might be linked here. So as you see, we upgraded Airlift to, this is the one, spooled client protocol extension. So this landed now. So the client protocol in the future will have some spooling support, and we are optimizing the JSON format to reduce redundancies and basically make the whole thing more transparent, like more optimized. I mean, the protocol, like the existing client protocol, was created basically at the start of Trino. So like 12-ish or whatever years ago. So it's definitely time to improve that. And this spooled implementation is now in. And Mateusz got that added. There's more PRs coming, but it's getting closer and closer to allow us to have this spooling enabled, which will then allow us to have the JDBC driver and then also the CLI take advantage of it, which will mean that parallel downloads of more data basically is going to be quite a bit faster than what is possible now, which enables use cases where you need to get larger result sets onto your local workstation to do, you know, whatever with the data, like further processing, whatever. Super exciting. And obviously we are adding this in the JDBC driver, but then also we're going to add it in all the other clients. So Python client, JavaScript client, we'll get that kind of stuff. Go, whatever we have otherwise, we'll make it so that all the clients can take advantage of it over time. So that's coming. Yeah. And first things are in.
With a new client protocol, it's, if you're an end user of Trino, what this means is better clients. And this will take time because first Trino has to release the new client protocol and really ship this in a way that clients can leverage it. And then all of the Trino clients will have to take advantage of this. The base Trino clients will do this pretty quickly because they're part of Trino. But third-party clients and everywhere else is going to have to, we're going to have to go round them up and say, hey, you can go use the new client protocol and get more information to make your client more robust. We're trying to support the evolving use cases of Trino. You know, it's the protocol should update every once in a while because people are using Trino differently today than they were using it a decade ago. A decade ago, we didn't even know what Iceberg was. I don't think it had been made yet. So.
Yeah, it didn't exist yet.
Yeah, so it's about time for a change. And this is exciting stuff. actually wasn't super familiar with this until I was looking at it for this episode today. So it's fun to see new work being done. And I have a cat getting in the way.
Really. Yeah, and it's coming. A lot of this work is coming out of Starburst and our users in Starburst Galaxy and other places that just demand more data to be downloaded locally. And obviously, we want this to benefit the whole Trino community, which is great because that way all the client tools can take advantage of it and the whole ecosystem will benefit from expanded use cases. And that's really awesome.
Yeah. While you mentioned Starburst, maybe it's time to click the little button about who sponsors the Trino Community Broadcast.
Thank you to our sponsor, Starburst Data, for helping to make the Trino Community Broadcast happen.
Had to be done, Manfred. And of course, the shameless plug is that Starburst clients will be among the first to adopt the new client protocol when it happens. That's as commercial as I'm going to get now.
Yeah. Given that we're both at Starburst, we also did some other things as part of our Starburst work, but actually for the Trino community. One thing we did is we cleaned up our Slack channels. So you wouldn't believe how many Slack channels there were.
There were so many. And
that were in kind of unused. So I took inventory and like looked at all these like Slack channels, and all of these Slack channels are now gone. So we consolidated a lot. Hopefully we have more efficient communication now. Also in that realm, I want to point out that everyone who contributes pull requests to Trino and wants help with that, there is a core-dev channel. So that's the one you talk about these things. One last thing we want to do with the Slack channels is we want to consolidate the client-related Slack channels. So we're probably going to have one for the Python ecosystem and client, one for the JavaScript one, and then the rest of the discussion we'll be doing in the normal beginner and users until a need arrives for, say, the Go client channel becomes so busy and there's so many people that want to use Go and Trino that we need a separate channel, then we'll stand that up as well. But I think at this stage, it's going to be just JavaScript and Python where we do that. We already have a Python client and a dbt kind of channel, but that kind of like overlaps and it's kind of like we're going to be consolidated as well. And then we have a much cleaner, good Slack channel setup, I think. So it's going to be easier for everyone to figure out where to ask the questions and also not have to cross post in 5 different channels to get the answer, hopefully.
Yeah, and people are still going to post in beginner and dev and troubleshooting the same thing 3 times, but that's just the nature of the Trino Slack. If you want to talk about anything else, there should be a good home for it and not 90,000 extra channels.
Yeah. One other effort I wanted to, or two things I wanted to mention as well quickly. You see that I have this background here with Commander Banban and stuff. We have a bunch of those backgrounds now in the Trino Presentations repository. For those of you that want to attend, internal video calls in your company or whatever with a Trino background, they are available now in the Presentations repository. Look in the announcement Slack channel for details. So that should be fun. And then also, please help us with closing issues. If you filed issues in the past and you know they're no longer valid, or you see them in the GitHub repository, we're trying to get to a level where this becomes more manageable. I'm proud to report that the pull request is under 300 now. And I've been doing a lot of work there, closing old ones, leading discussions and stuff. We're going to get that under 100, I swear.
One day. I mean, it used to be, what was it before we started the cleanup like a year and a half ago? It was up around like 800.
Yeah, something like that. So
as you, me and Brian Olson shut out a ton of old stale pull requests.
So. Yeah, and they're still going on, but it's become much better. And thank you to all the maintainers and contributors who are rebasing, reviewing, and helping along and moving them along. We want to get to a stage where it's like a constant manufacturing, going through, shipping, right? Like,
speaking of shipping, I realized we have a comment, which is that we're going back a moment here, but looked forward to 458 for client support. So,
oh, look, Mateusz is on the ball. Exciting.
Yeah, so 458 will be a big release. We're talking about upcoming things. When we say upcoming, we mean like it's a week from now, not like sometime in the vague future.
That's next Wednesday, hopefully. Yeah, so if you want to help with just looking at these issues, if there's any ones we're aware of, you filed, and so a lot of them are very, very old and probably no longer valid. Anyone that wants to, like, at least attack the ones that you filed yourself, that would already be super useful. We will probably automate that, similar to what we've done with the pull requests, where we triage them in an automated fashion and look at them and more like that. But it's going to take us a while. So any additional help anyone can offer or insights you can provide would be super useful.
Yeah, it's we wanted to be very manual with pull requests because every pull request involves a person that has done a meaningful amount of work. Like, they have written code, understood something, and tried to solve a problem. So it feels very bad for a pull request to get shut out automatically by a bot without anyone ever looking at it. With issues, you can be a little more aggressive, I feel. A lot of issues in Trino are people who are making GitHub issues, asking for help with bug fixing or troubleshooting, where the reply can be a simple, hey, that's what the Slack is for.
Or if you don't want to use Slack, you can use GitHub discussions.
Yes.
Well, which we don't monitor that well, but like that's also something we want to get better at. So
it is at least where it should go on GitHub.
That's where it should go.
The issues which are meant to be like tickets tracking work that needs to be done in Trino.
Yeah, not a like help. I don't know how to do this kind of thing.
Yeah, and if there's a bug that is you know to be Trino's problem where something used to work and now it no longer works, and you don't think that was a feature change or a breaking change that caused that, that's when an issue makes sense, as that allows the engineers to get on that. But issues aren't, please help me. So we're going to need to do some work on those. Closing out 2,000 plus issues is a daunting task that we've been thinking about for, you've been talking about this for almost 2 years, Manfred.
I know, but I'm getting closer and closer. Like, now that the pull requests are in a pretty damn good space, I'm like, I have a plan for this. Like, I'm going to probably do something like the stalebot where I'm limiting the time frame it's looking at.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's like, do a forward-facing thing, and then you have a backlog to work through. I like that.
Like, I just opened up the pull request one to look at all the pull requests.
Okay. So it's going to go back to 2021 and 2020. So
yep, it's done. It's all running.
All right. Well, we have a couple more things to talk about very briefly, which we have one more banner for. Trino Summit, it's still happening. It's still coming. We need sessions. We need speakers. I suspect people are waiting until the deadline of the call for speakers to submit their talks, because submitting early is no fun. Submit early.
Please don't wait for the deadline.
don't wait. If you think you have a talk that you want to do at Trino Summit, submit it. It can be deeply technical or beginner friendly. We're really open to a wide range of talks. We're doing 2 days. We need a lot of talks. So if you're in the Trino community, you're watching this, you've done anything cool, anything interesting, you've used Trino in a neat way, you've contributed something to Trino that you think is meaningful, or anything else, if it's related to Trino, submit it. We'll talk to you about it. We'll figure out how to make it a successful talk at Trino Summit. I'm really looking forward to seeing you there.
Yeah, also, it should be easy to attend because it's going to be a virtual call. And so you should register to get it onto your calendar, and also talk to your employers if they want to help us sponsor the event. And yeah, like Cole mentioned, submit your proposals as well.
And then finally, we've got another Trino community broadcast already in the plans with Ren AI and Trino, Manfred. You want to explain a little bit more about that as a teaser?
Yeah, so Ren AI seems to be just recently gotten into the Trino integrations. There was a pull request that recently merged, and I reached out, and they were gracious enough that both the contributor who implemented Trino support and the CTO of Ren AI will probably join us. It's going to be a very international call because they're in India and Taiwan, so I have to figure out timing yet, but this is going to be happening. It should be super interesting. Ren AI is a text-to-SQL analysis engine. So basically, you'll be able to, in plain text, talk to Ren AI, and then it's going to create valid SQL queries out of it. And then from there, you can iterate in a usual kind of natural language kind of data analysis flow. So it looks really cool. And with Trino, obviously, you unlocking a lot of data to look at, right? Like all the different connectors and stuff allow you to have all sorts of data connected to it. So it's a great combination because RAN AI can do that conversion, but now it can like literally look to like nearly any database.
Yep. And this is getting a technical tool into the hands of non-technical users, something we're always generally excited about. We're often in the weeds, but it's important to remember that at the end of the day, there's someone trying to write a SQL query that's powered by Trino. And this can make that even easier for them. So it's a cool tool to talk about. And integrations like this are always great for community because it gets it into the hands of more users, which is beneficial for everyone. I think that's it from us, though, Manfred.
Yeah, bit of a shorter episode, but not that much shorter, actually. Sorry, I talked too much, I guess.
It happens sometimes. But once again, thank you all for tuning in. It's a pleasure, as always, Manfred, to be on the Trino Community Broadcast with you. If you have any questions, you can always find us on the Slack, on GitHub, or anywhere else. But till next time, we'll see you later.
Thank you for tuning in to the Trino Community Broadcast, brought to you by Starburst Data.